Did you inherit $1 million from your grandparent, or are you about to become wealthy from someone else's hard work? If you say yes to these questions, this show is not for you. You, the hardworking, committed, and ambitious professional who have a 9-to-5 corporate job or a 12-hour shift worker keeping the assembly line running. Perhaps you run your gig as a freelancer, or maybe you run a small business. You are in the right place. Welcome to the Career Evangelist Podcast, where you get your weekly tips, ideas, strategies, and inspiration to find purpose in what you do so you can build a career you are passionate about and live a fulfilled life. Here is your host, Bola Alabi.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Career Evangelist Podcast. I'm your host, Bola Alabi. And with me here today, I have Mary. Mary, she's an author of Repo Madness. So Mary had she called it an extreme view about money and financial system. We are going to be talking with Mary and learn her view. And hopefully we can learn something and gain something from Mary today. Without keeping you guys waiting any further, I'm going to bring in my guest, Mary. Hey, Mary, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us here.
Are you facing challenges in your life that are affecting your happiness and goals? Whether you are dealing with mental health issues like depression or anxiety or simply going through a tough time, therapy can provide valuable tools to help you navigate life. Today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is on a mission to make therapy more accessible and affordable. They understand that finding a therapist can be challenging, especially when limited to local options. BetterHelp offers an online platform that matches you with a professional therapist in just a few days after answering a few questions. Signing up and getting matched with a therapist is easy. You can find a link in the show notes at betterhelp.com/thecareerevangelist. By using this link, not only do you support this podcast, but you also receive a 10% discount on your first month with BetterHelp. Take this opportunity to connect with a therapist and explore how it can benefit you. If you are going through a tough time, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/thecareerevangelist. Thank you, BetterHelp, for your support of this podcast.
My listeners, they would like to know you. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to us, Mary?
Okay. I was a financial writer for 11 years. And I was hired in 2006 to write about money market funds. And it was pretty dull because money market funds aren't very exciting.
That's right.
But then when the financial crisis hit, it became very exciting because money market funds became an integral part of the financial crisis. So I went in all directions. And for 11 years, to make a long story short, I wrote articles every week, basically about shadow banking. And as I went along and I found interesting quotes, interesting points of view, interesting papers, I put them aside. And when I left 11 years later, I had boxes and boxes of research, and it took a few years before I went through it all. And I just, what I did was I just called the most compelling and interesting papers and quotes that I could find, and I cobbled together a story with a message. And that's the book. Oh. And the book is about repurchase agreements. They're short-term overnight loans. And I'll get to that in a minute, but I want to start by saying I think it's groundbreaking on two levels. First, it tells the mechanics behind the shadow banking system. Most books talk about one aspect of it, but this book rips the veneer off and just explains some very basic elements that the everyday people need to know, because this affects all of us in a very huge way. And up until now, people just aren't aware of it. And the impact is tremendous. So learning the basics, opening that window just a little is what I try to accomplish. And the second part, of course, is to have people read it who don't normally read finance, but who care about wages and, being a part of a real economy and getting, having high-speed rail and good schools. None of that's happening now because our world is being, our economy, that is just being drained by a parasitic massive system called the shadow banking system. And trillions of dollars are redirected into the pockets of the investment banks and the fortunate few. I call them the fortunate few. So every day that system is in place, every day people are robbed of having a role in a real economy and sharing the wealth. So that's the main message of the book. And I like to think about lately, this is sort of a new revelation I had, because I thought about how when people, hear about how we spend $8 trillion on forever wars. And when you hear that, you get disgusted and you think, that money could have gone to, like I said, other things. But also when you hear it, you can visualize where it went. You can picture the weapons and the contracts and, you can see where it went. With shadow banking, you have trillions of dollars being siphoned out, and people aren't aware of it. They're aware of it probably in the abstract, but they don't really have a grasp on where it goes and what it does and how it's robbing us of a better life. The wars are easy to visualize. Shadow banking is a monolith, it's a mystery, and it's time to change that. So I ask my readers to envision our planet with encased in fiber optic cables running around the entire world, so that when you look at the Earth from the moon, it looks like a giant ball of twine. And underneath those cables are you and me. But those cables consist of trillions and trillions of dollars worth of transactions whizzing through, spilling off profits for a very small segment of humanity. And we don't even know about them because we're walking below. So the first part of my book is called Of Our Heads. And before I go into that, I'd like to get a definition of shadow banking. That would be
Yeah, I
helpful.
was going to ask you about that because.
Ellen Brown's book. Ellen Brown is a great author, and I highly recommend her book, Banking on the People. It's an excellent book. So I took it from her, give her credit. Finance. This is a definition of shadow banking. Financial intermediaries not subject to regulatory oversight involved in facilitating the creation of credit across the global financial system. It also refers to unregulated activities by regulated institutions. So the important part to focus on there is unregulated, because this has a history. It just didn't come up from nothing. But it did evolve in the 80s, 1980s, particularly started to gain steam, and it was completely out of the view of regulators. So what I do in the beginning of the book, the introduction basically is filled with heavily sourced observations about the shadow banking system from Fed officials, no politicians, because politicians don't know anything about it. In 15 years of research, I found one example of a politician even saying the word repurchase agreement, which is, I'll get to in a minute what they are, but one politician in 15 years of going through papers. So they are completely ignorant of this. And as you'll soon find out, they should learn about it.
No, absolutely.
So anyway, in the 1980s, all right, repurchase agreements are short-term overnight loans. They're collateralized loans. And in the 1980s, the Federal Reserve used them as a tool, and they still do, in monetary policy. So if they wanted to loosen the money supply, they would lend cash and have treasuries for collateral. If they wanted to tighten it, they would lend the treasuries and have cash as collateral. Very simple. But in the 80s, the investment banks globbed onto it, and they decided that they would use these short-term overnight agreements, collateralized agreements, using largely treasuries at the time, to make bets on interest rate directions, and it became a tool for arbitrage. I like to call it liquidity at the altar of arbitrage. So in the 1980s, nobody was paying attention, and one particular Wall Street firm went bankrupt because when they were trading in these treasuries and interest rates were extremely high back then, they didn't factor in interest rates for their trading the other side of the contract. And so when the interest came due, they were so busy, playing with their money, they didn't have any money to pay the interest on the treasuries that they had lent. So they came up short, and they went out of business. But they had to make good on those interest rate payments. So the Fed was involved. They didn't pay for the interest rate. Their custodial banks, Chase Bank and Manufacturers Trust, were the custodians for this company. So they just went in their own pockets to fix it. But the Fed was clear that if they hadn't, the Fed would have stepped in. So this is the beginning of the Federal Reserve being the rescue person for this kind of activity. And so once that occurred, do you have a question? I'm doing all the talking here. Do you have a question?
I was gonna ask. You said unregulated activities. And I think you were also mentioning repurchase agreements. Can you talk more about those unregulated activities that all these shadow banking institutions are practicing?
Well, that's what I'm talking. That's what this is. I mean, none of this, an example is when this bankruptcy occurred, one of the major newspapers made the point that their activities could threaten the entire $500 billion treasury market. So it was destabilizing, to say the least, what they did. But instead of observing this as a potential threat and something that needed to be reformed and looked at, regulators looked the other way. They just put a patch on the tire and everything kept going. There was no interference or no, they weren't given pause, like, wow, this could destabilize a $500 billion market. Maybe we should take a look at what they're doing and nip it in the bud. Just the opposite occurred, and it just exploded and continued. Now, a few months later, another firm went bankrupt, and the reason was that they had financial improprieties, and one of the people who executed transactions for them refused to do so. So that was the premise for the bankruptcy. But the important thing is nobody writes about this. I mean, nobody. You're going to hear scholars do, of course, people who write about the machinations and the intricacies of the market write about it, but you'll never see it written in the mainstream media, or at least I haven't. Anyhow, and it's important. So what happened when this bankruptcy occurred? You had a repo market that was in the billions of dollars by 1986. This was 1982, so it was beginning to build. When this occurred, a judge in the bankruptcy court decided that the collateral in these overnight loans was a secured loan and was subject to the automatic stay, which is imposed when, when someone goes bankrupt, the assets are frozen. Now, this would have destroyed this repo market because the would So I hope we're having are we okay with the internet? I just got a thing. Anyway.
So let me take ask you this. So obviously this shadow banking is a problem. That was why you wrote about it. Now let's talk about solution or your recommendation for people. I'm sure your book is not only highlighting the problem, There are certain things you think people can do to safeguard themselves. If you don't mind, can you maybe mention one or two
Well,
things?
if you don't mind, I'd like to say that it's for near the end. I don't know how much time we have, so but I do have that for near the end. But I want to talk more about the evolution before I get to salute. This it would be a revolution. I'm not stupid. For anything to fix this, it would be, and there's nothing anyone can do in terms of, you know, I'm going to attack, tackle shadow banking tomorrow. It would involve an extreme revolution and reformation of the entire system.
Okay.
And I'm not, I mean, I know it probably will never happen, but, you know, people are out there writing about it. And that's another thing I want to touch on.
Okay.
And a couple of examples, but I do want to just continue on this and I'll be quick.
Okay.
After the bankruptcy, so in the book, you know, I go through these two bankruptcies and their implications. What happened when the judge decided that the collateral could be frozen was, and I'll be quick, was the Congress and the IRS stepped in and exempted the collateral from bankruptcy. So they stepped into preserved commercial paper. That kind of collateral was exempted from the automatic stay in bankruptcy. So that made it, you know, allowed it to continue. And I won't go into the other two chapters too much because we don't have that much time, but I do a chapter on the collateral itself, on risks associated with it. For example, collateral in this crazy system can be used to support multiple transactions. And that, you know, indicates a lot of risk in terms of who knows what and where and who has the collateral. It's not, it's complicated. And I try to keep it simple, but everything about this is not simple. So, but the book is heavily sourced with a lot of great quotes because I let other people tell the story and I just sort of go along, but they explain it better than me. So they're in the book.
Okay.
And then I do a chapter on these lending, which is used similar to repo. They, you know, lend stock and short term, but longer tenor than repo. But and that has its own set of problems. And those are the three prongs of shadow banking:
okay.
collateral, repurchase agreements, and securities lending. So that's that. Now, what I do after I write about sort of the basics, it's a short book. It's only 149 pages, so pile on. After I do that, I spend a section. I believe this is a corroded system that it doesn't work, and that it needs to be looked at and fixed. So so before I get to what the solutions are, which I'm going to have to say I'm not too much have too much on that, but I can give you ideas.
Recommendations, yeah.
But before that, in the book, I get these really renowned economists who are well respected, and there's chapters on there. One of them testifies in Congress, and I, you know, relay his testimony. It's just the most cogent, clear analysis. See, I'm not the one saying that this is crazy, and that's these people are also, and they're way more qualified than me. So his testimony before Congress was, you know, wonderful. It was just so clear that all of this is so unfair and needs to change. And the banks have an inbuilt guarantee with bailouts and gives them easier credit, which is the opposite. You don't give a drunk driver cheaper insurance.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And so I also have a professor from University of Chicago, Luigi Zingales, who wrote a paper, Does Finance Benefit Society? And his, you know, conclusion is no. Over the last 40 years, all of this financialization and involvement of finance in our economy has not benefited our society overall. And then I have another economist, John Kay, and I'd like to end the interview with a quote from him. So leave me about, you know, 40 seconds or something at the end.
Okay.
But then the last chapter does talk about these solutions, you know, ideas.
Yeah.
And one of them, I have to read this, you know, the Bank of North Dakota is a prime example. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard of
about how different it is. Have you heard about how the Bank of North Dakota is state-owned? It has a low cost, no private shareholders. It's all within that state. All the money goes and is managed, and everybody's participates and gets a fair shake. They don't need any multiple branches. They have no involvement with Wall Street. They don't siphon any money off to Wall Street. The Bank of North Dakota is like a blueprint of what it could be like to have a fair, inclusive, and democratic economic system. And it's also profitable. It outperformed many of the investment banks on Wall Street. So it's an extremely interesting place to look. And I did read about it because I want to give credit where credit's due to Ellen Brown's book, Banking on the People. She's extremely bright. All her books are amazing, and I highly recommend them to anyone interested. And another thing she recommends is to nationalize the Fed and give everybody an account in the United States. Just have a Fed account and have it run and not have to borrow money on short term to get liquidity. There are other paradigms. And I am far from an economist. I'm actually a poet. And
Oh, well, you did
so
a great job
I
diving into this financial topic. I know
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
easy, but that's
So this is not normally my thing, but I just got kind of obsessed, I guess. So I am a literary person, so I'm not really good at describing all the economic details. But the point is that and according to books I've read, obviously, there are paradigms that would erase all of these risky shadow banking activities that they're out there. Another proposal was to have the Federal Reserve nationalized again, and to be sure that we address the problem of the banked and unbanked, because one in four Americans I read either has no bank account or is unable to really use one and is subject vulnerable to predatory lenders. So that that is not
that's not
a good situation.
true.
And years ago, they actually had bank branches in all of our post offices, so people could access the bank. That actually happened, and then the big banks got involved, and they stopped it. But that would be a great way to have people to have access to money, because these predatory lenders are horrible. And there's other situations, like a paper was written suggesting you separate the commercial banks, make them strictly commercial, strictly for the customers, traditional bank loan to deposit ratio, no Wall Street involvement, no betting in the casino, just commercial banks, and then have investment banks, the one who want to do all this shadow banking, as separate entities, and they would not have the Fed backing them. So if something were to happen to these investment banks, so be it. But we wouldn't be subsidizing them, and it would remove the moral hazard that, excuse me, that comes with that. So, and that's just a handful. But one thing also I want to add, I don't mean to be talking so much. I feel like I'm trying to get it all in. But one thing that I found really shocking and disturbing is that these people who are writing reforms and writing papers on how to better serve the greater good, they are being shunned in the academia and the mainstream media. Their papers are not
And published.
publicized. If they write about anything that, quote, is, and I learned this from Professor Zingales's paper, if they write about anything remotely costly to the banks, they are shunned and disinvited to conferences and that sort of thing. So it's repressed, but it's a huge thing. I mean, the debate last night, I just sat there and thought, you people are talking about all this stuff, but there's this multi-trillion dollar siphoning off of money. Think about it. Why don't we have high speed rail? Why don't we see communities growing and building and improving? There's a reason, because trillions of dollars are being siphoned off to an insular group of people. I mean, it's pretty depressing.
No, I do understand what you are saying, and
Okay, I'm going to shut up now. You can talk. I'm sorry I talk too much.
no, yeah, I see that you are passionate about this topic.
I am. I'm really, it is. It's so sad.
You are very vocal, and thank you for bringing your voice, adding your voice to this topic. There are obviously many things that many people don't know, including myself, because I also read a lot about financial information, and this shadow banking thing that you are explaining today, it's quite new to me. I know there are number of my listeners that may want to learn more and know more so that they can know how to protect or whatever they can do to safeguard themselves. I want you to tell us where we can find your book and how my
Oh,
listeners
the book is, oh, sorry. The book is called Repo Madness, A Simpleton's Guide to the Street's Wicked Ways, and it's on Amazon. And I'm the simpleton, just so you know, not the reader.
So
I
that's
just
all.
sort of let them know. But I think that this is what I want to get across. First of all, it's heavily sourced, and I'm really proud of all the quotes I got. It sounds maybe silly, but I mean, I just went through 15 years of papers and marketing material from the banks, everything. And I really worked hard to siphon off the very best, most direct quotes to the subject. And the chapters on the testimony before Congress and from these renowned economists, I think will make people feel, you know, this is wrong. And I'm not, you know, these people feel it's wrong. And I don't know what's going on, but I know I'm struggling. I know I can't meet my bills. I know this is going on. But if there are people there, and these people are so bright and they're in my book, if there are people there who know the whole deal, you know, they know the deal, because most of us don't. But when you read what they say, then you'll know that you're right. You're right. It's not right. And you can buttress that by reading what these men have said. And these are people who know. They're not writing off the top of their heads. They're renowned economists. They know what's going on. And even if you think it's great. And then, you know, there's some fun parts in the book too. I'm very cynical in the book, and I hope that people enjoy that. There's a part where Lloyd Blankfein, the head of Goldman Sachs, says at a conference at Jackson Hole that Goldman Sachs does God's work. So that's pretty funny. I try to get some humor in there.
This week is all about Jackson Hole. It's funny that you mentioned it. A lot is going on around the world. Inflation at sky high. A lot of things going on in the economy today. But people need to educate themselves so that they will know how to protect themselves. So Mary, I know you said there are a lot of quotes, and I want to give
There's
you,
one quote I want to read, just one. How much time do we have?
we have about 5 minutes left. I
Oh,
want to give
okay.
you that opportunity to share that quote
Thank
with
you. Well, it just says it
us.
all. Yeah, I
And
think it says it all.
also tell us why that quote is important to you.
Oh, because, well, it says it all in one quote, the whole thing. This is by an economist named John Kay, from Britain. And he wrote it in his paper called Defense is Just Another Industry, his speech. Actually, it was a speech. And he says, we need to finance, I have to get it closer so I can see. We need a finance sector to manage our payments, finance our housing stock, restore our infrastructure, fund our retirement, and support new business. But very little of that expertise that exists in the finance industry today relates to facilitation of these payments. The provision of housing, the management of large construction projects, the needs of the elderly, or nurturing of small businesses. The process of financial intermediation is an end in itself. So that's it.
Wow. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate your time, Mary. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. with my community. And there's a lot that you've shared, and I do know that there's so much going on.
Oh, one more thing before I go. I have a great friend named Mary Fricker. Her name's Mary Fricker, and she's really smart. She knows all about this. And her website is www.repowatch.org.
Okay.
And there they can get a great education. Repowatch.org.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.